Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Tentacle Monster Williams.
Ew. No. That's a hard redact that. Redact that.
Hateful.
We need to rewind and delete that. That is not okay.
I know, never. Right?
And the other voice you hear is the other side of that beast, and that
ew,
is...
We're
going to vote you off this podcast.
Intern slash part-timer slash stenographer slash coffee girl Amy.
Yo, I don't have tentacles, and I do not subscribe to that type of mentality either.
Well, thankfully for those who have subscribed to this podcast, you are in for a treat as we are going to be discussing the recently dropped Marvel film, and that is Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. I'm so stoked to talk about this. We all got a chance to see it, and we are all ready to spill it. So, before we move any further, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophy and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. There you can check out all of our episodes. We are over 280 episodes. And you know what? We are thriving. We are continuing to move forward. We got everything from Marvel to DC to action to some romance, thanks to Amy. So
Forcibly romance.
Check it out. Our website, filmlosophers.com, also on the social pages, as well as any streaming platform where you listen to podcasts. So check us out there, Spotify, Audio Boom, Pandora, iTunes, Google Play, everywhere you can. Subscribe to our podcast. Give us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear from you. But yeah, like I said, this is an episode that we are all here excited about because let's just be real. We are Marvel nerds here at this table, and we love Marvel. We love good storytelling. We love great storytelling. And if ever there was a Marvel film to talk about great storytelling, it is this one. And yes, we are talking about Marvel's Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. This movie has been hyped up for a good amount of time, obviously since the announcement of it, not to mention the filming during COVID, during the season of COVID, which is still going on, which is there even a name for what 2020 was other than just bad?
No.
No, we're almost like to 2022 and I still think 2020 was like, you know, a lot closer than it was.
It just felt like 10, I think Spence put it well, he goes, it felt like it was 10 years in 1 year.
Yeah.
But thankfully we got the chance to go check out this movie in theaters or in the drive-in, Spencer.
Yep.
But nevertheless, we have been excited to see this movie for several reasons that we'll get into. And yeah, so with no more stalling, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Shang-Chi, living in hiding for most of his life, must confront the past he thought he left behind. Joined by his friend Katie and his estranged sister, Shang-Chi will embark on a journey of self-discovery and pain to uncover the truth behind the mysterious Ten Rings organization and its powerful yet familiar leader, his father.
Directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, the film stars Simu Liu, Awkwafina Menger Zhang, Fala Chen, Florian Montinu, Benedict Wong, Michelle Yao, Ben Kingsley, and Tony Leung. This is actually one of the first times legendary Hong Kong film actor Tony Chua Leung, or Tony Leung, this is one of his actual first roles in an American film.
What?
Yeah, he's never done an American film prior to this. Most of his films had been done in China. So this is a really good, you know, awesome treat for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
The thing is, and this was also his first English speaking role, which you wouldn't even know it, seeing as he speaks it so fluently.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. But I thought that was really cool, especially with the fact that he actually knew nothing about the Mandarin. So when he was given the role, he didn't try to research the character, actually. When Marvel Studios contacted him, they gave him full authority to make his own history of the character. He did not mind playing a villainous character, which is his first time ever as well, but he sought to give the character depth and history. He said, "I tried to explore the reasons that led him to become who he is. He is a man with history who craves to be loved. He is a sociopath, a narcissist, and a bigot, but he is also human and has a family." I just thought that was really interesting from the actor point of view. Tony Leung has been in cinema for a good amount of time, and I one of the films that I remember him most was a few years back. He did a movie called The Grandmaster, which was pretty phenomenal. It's kind of a play on Ip Man, the story of Ip Man, but it's not exactly. It's just kind of taking liberties from that story. But on the comic side, this is interestingly enough, in the late 80s, Stan Lee had actually considered a film or TV series about Shang-Chi, mm-hmm. and had in mind Brandon Lee, son of obviously the martial arts superstar Bruce Lee, for the role. Shang-Chi was visually based on Bruce Lee, so Brandon seemed a fitting choice, but unfortunately plans fell through, and sadly as time went on, Brandon Lee passed. One of the great things about this film is the fact that, like, the numbers this past weekend, it dropped Labor Day weekend, and oddly enough, for everything going on, it actually broke weekend records. So for the Labor Day weekend records, it drew in almost or over $90 million. I think the last tally I saw was $94 million, beating out the previous record holder of Halloween from 2007, who held it at about $31 million. So that's really great. And I think a good sign of the fact that I think people are coming out of their, you know, safety of their homes, I guess, to go and see the movie. So obviously being safe, of course, but So talking about Shang-Chi, this is a character I will gladly say I know nothing about in the comics. My understanding of Shang-Chi is like minimal. Like, the only thing I know about this entire film is its connection with the Ten Rings because of everything with Iron Man and everything going there. We got to see parts of that throughout the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the introduction of the Ten Rings in the first Iron Man movie. And then we get glimpses of the Ten Rings throughout different parts, like the guy who's trying to buy the tech from Hank Pym in Ant-Man.
The guy that plays the Hornet or the Yellow Jacket?
No. He's actually a buyer. He actually has the tattoo on the side of his neck.
I thought it was just the crazy guy that, you know, decided to attack children in their home.
You're talking about Yellow Jacket?
There you go.
I don't know. That's
the
one of those.
The Jacketed Man.
The Jacketed Man. I don't actually. I may have to rewatch Ant-Man because I don't know who he worked for.
There you go.
It's really interesting. There was also another appearance of the Ten Rings in the.
Besides the
second Iron Man movie.
In the background of. When Sir Ben Kingsley portraying the Mandarin with quotes.
Well, that's the third one. But in the second one, one of the members of the Ten Rings is the one who gives information or tech, I believe, to Whiplash.
My bird. I want my bird.
Yes. Mickey Rourke and his wonderful Russian accent. Only towered by Spencer's Russian accent, which he does really well.
I must break you.
See? Told you.
So stupid.
I must break you.
So, I'm at a loss of information when it comes to the backstory or even the exploits of Shang-Chi. To be frank, I don't know much. What about you, Spencer? Are you aware of anything outside of this movie when it comes to Shang-Chi?
No.
Honesty.
That's
policy.
There's apparently a lot to the character. It's just, unfortunately, and maybe it's just the sign of the world we live in, there's not a lot of conversations or there's not a lot of people who mention Shang-Chi.
It runs into kind of a weird space. So Shang-Chi was created, his artist was Jim Starlin, which most people will probably know from the Infinity Gauntlet. series where he paired up with Ron Lim, which was really interesting, who's a Sacramento artist. But the writer for Shang-Chi when it originally was created was, I know him as John Harkness because that's one of his pen names, but it's Steve Englehart. And so it started out, he was like the master of Kung Fu. That's how you knew him. And he was also the you can't say undocumented. They tried to tie him into the villain Fu Manchu. I am not joking. So of notorious movie fame.
Which, by the way, just a quick note. I know that name.
There you go.
Like, growing up, obviously you have those, like, now not appropriate jokes, but you would have people who would, like, have, like, or pretend to have, like, those pencil-thin mustaches that came from the sides of their lips and all the way down, and everybody's, oh, it's a Fu Manchu, or, oh, and it's like, I never really understood it. I was aware of the name until I realized, okay, they're making fun of or talking about a Asian character. But I didn't know that Fu Manchu
was portrayed by white men, to be specific, too.
I didn't know that he actually had any kind of relations right now, because it didn't dawn on me. To be frank, I wasn't aware of Shang-Chi until like the last maybe 5 years. 5-6 years. It wasn't one of those ones that I was really aware of. And then frighteningly enough, I didn't know that Fu Manchu had ties to Shang-Chi until the last 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, because Marvel ended up kind of losing that, the allow, but they weren't allowed to say he was related to Fu Manchu anymore after I think they hit the 90s. And so they changed his father's name, which I cannot pronounce. So I do apologize for everyone. Every name that I'm about to butcher, I so apologize to everyone. But I think it's like Zhengzu. It's Zhengzu. Which is not the name of Tony Leung's character in Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings. The best way that I knew Shang-Chi was him being the master of Kung Fu, Fu Manchu, and then he's actually part of the Heroes for Hire. So at one point, he ran away from...
Which, for people who don't know who the Heroes for Hire are...
So Heroes for Hire, if you've been keeping up on your Netflix, is one Danny Rand, Iron Fist, Luke Cage... Jessica, I'm going to forget her last name.
Jessica Jones.
Thank you. Misty Knight. Hellcat, a.k.a. Patsy Walker. And then one, Mr. Shang-Chi. Or Master of Fists. Like, he has a couple of names. But he ends up... I knew about him because he ended up showing up randomly kind of in that space where we had Daughters of the Dragon, which was Misty Knight and Patsy Walker. And then he teams up with Danny Rand in a few moments.
I was going to say, it seemed like this was... So I don't know how those types of like politics worked out in comics, but in my mind, I'm assuming they paired those two up quite a bit.
Yeah.
With, you know, Iron Fist and Shang-Chi.
They did.
Almost so, like in the Kato and Green Hornet kind of...
A little bit. So what you're kind of running into is... the locality issues. So in the comic books, Shang-Chi does not run away to San Francisco as we see him in the movie. He runs away to Manhattan. And so while he's in Manhattan, you're going to run into quite a cornucopia of superheroes. And he had some people, I believe he was working at a fish market. Some people were getting extorted. They needed a protector. He donned a, and I quote, silly outfit to be their protector and happened to run into Danny Rand.
You quote it from what? Is that what the comic said?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I like I said, I don't know any of this. I'm probably on par with Spencer in terms of the amount of information we had coming into this movie. But,
which is better. I mean, for the most part, if you go into this movie not knowing anything, just going in to enjoy it, I think it does exactly what it's supposed to do.
Yeah. Talking about what it's supposed to do and so forth, let's talk about expectations. Now, I'm going to genuinely probably be on the same level with Spencer and saying the most that I had in terms of expectations were the trailers and the studio behind it. Like, because for me, the only expectations that I had was I was hoping that Marvel was going to create a decent martial arts film without it turning into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. Just being honest, like...
like, let's have Vanilla Ice come back for this movie.
That'd be perfect. At that tail end of that big fight in the movie, you know, you had ice, baby. Like, you know, go ninja, go.
Yeah, go ninja, go.
I don't know. Like, I was hoping, like, because we don't get a lot of martial arts films coming out of Disney. We don't get a lot of that hand-to-hand combat style-focused films. You don't really get a lot of that from Disney. You get, like, weapons. You get, like, you know, street brawls that look kind of ridiculous. You get magic. A lot of it is very kind of beating around the bush of, like, of real hand-to-hand combat.
Right.
So taking a actual real martial arts perspective and making sure that people who know martial arts or are aware of the different styles, unlike the guy on the bus, it's like, I took Taekwondo when I was 9, so I'm going to give you a play-by-play.
He's great because he was from, do a split, a backflip, Spider-Man, yeah!
Do a flip, yeah.
Yeah, that was the same comedian, but I was like, oh, man, no, no.
But for me, like, a lot of my... So, going on the martial arts movie side, I've seen way too many to really kind of fess up in terms of how many martial arts films I've seen from, like, the 60s through 70s through the 80s through the 90s through the 2000s through the 2010s through the 2020s. There's been a bunch of them. And the thing I was hoping for was I was hoping that this film didn't, like, fall so far beneath that bar that it's like, oh, okay, it's a Disney movie. Like, I didn't want to see it and think this is a Disney movie. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know? What about you, Spence?
Okay, so that's interesting that you thought that, because I kind of was, like, going to this thing and was like, oh, well, I don't think they're going to put this much emphasis on the fighting.
Because
it is Disney, ultimately. So I was like, okay, this is probably going to take, like, a backseat at some point. But, other than that, I really just didn't know what to expect coming into this, because, like, I don't know anything about this. Like, I don't know much about most of them, but, like...
What did you expect in terms of with the recognition of already having, what is it, like, over 12, 13 years, 14? How many years has it been since the first Iron Man?
Oh, eight. Oh. So 13.
It's over a decade.
What were the expectations for you already having over a decade of Marvel films leading to this point?
Because
I think that's also a big perspective to have, seeing as we've ultimately grown up on these movies, and there is now a level of expectation for the quality as well as the storytelling. So
yeah, I wasn't really worried about, like, quality coming into this, but storytelling wise, I was kind of like, we're in an interesting point right now in the Marvel Universe where it's like we're transitioning into new things right now, and so I'm not quite sure what we're building to or where we're going. So it's kind of like, you know, story wise, I was like, I don't even know where we're gonna go with this.
Mm. Over to the comic book side of things, as
Ahoy.
Well as what were some of your expectations, Amy, in terms of this movie?
I based a lot of it going in kind of hoping I wasn't gonna see Fu Manchu. To be very, very honest, I didn't know how they were going to do that. That was just that's a hard no. Expectation-wise, I really came in with just the please don't jack it up mentality, because mm-hmm. really, we've seen Disney and Marvel try as they might to take steps forward into representation that is true. Black Panther knocked it out of the park. Right. Like, mm-hmm. and in doing this with who they decided to helm it with, I was hoping that that same care that was taken for Black Panther would translate into Shang-Chi. I'm on that same boat with you, Spencer. I had no idea that they were going to have so much emphasis on martial arts as a whole, as part of that beating heart of that the community, their community. And there was so many delightful things that came from it that I can't that it took my please don't suck expectation, and it was just like, not only did you not suck, you exceeded
well, we
my
haven't
expectation.
Got, we haven't gotten to
that, and hence I so, left it there.
And I think before Amy just gushes before, you know, outside of protocol, one of the things that I think really has to be considered is something that Amy has touched on in terms of, as well as piggybacking on something I said earlier about making sure that the thing that you are emulating, the thing that you are putting on screen, is not a mockery or a characterization of
or
it.
Or a caricature.
Or a caricature. Exactly. That's what I was looking for. A caricature of not only a fighting style, but a way of life. You know, you have the Asian culture, several parts of the Asian culture that hold tight very strongly to traditions, to decorum, to even to a sense of a militaristic devotion to a way of life. And that's one thing that, knowing it's in the hands of Disney, I had hope, but I also didn't want to count my chickens before they hatched. Because, like Amy said, you are representing, you are the biggest studio, movie studio, entity, corporation, whatever you want to call it, Walt's Floating Head. It's
Walt's Floating Head. That's the name of our band, Walt's Floating Head.
There you go. You have this entity who is creating a work that is supposed to be representative not only of the character in the comics that holds some slight racist undertones, the comics, not so much, you know, but also you're also wanting to be true to the people that are represented on screen, you know, whether if it's, you know, people who are Korean, people who are Chinese, people who are Japanese, you know, people who are, you know, Vietnamese, people, every way of life that you are representing here in this film, you have to make sure you do it right. Yeah. You know, and with the same care that they put into things like with their Pixar films, whether if it's Coco or Luca, or what's the next one?
Being Red.
Encanto.
Encanto.
Oh, that one.
That one, like, that, which is
for
based
Colombia.
Yeah, South America. I mean, they send people to do the research, and they recreate as much as they can the truest sense of being there.
And that's a blessing. Yeah, that's the gift of Pixar in doing what the revival. We could have a long talk about what Disney Animation did during their revival, where they brought they took trips, they brought creatures, they tried to immerse themselves, and Pixar goes, you bring them to the animators. How about we bring the animators to the places inspire them?
Yeah. So I think that's kind of ultimately where my head was at within that realm. Because Amy, like I said, she brings up a really great point. So jumping into, because I know Amy's already looking up her words to
the ones say, that I'm really going to badly pronounce. Yes. So many.
First impressions, Spencer.
Are we spoiling or not spoiling? That should be a good question.
I think we have enough room to not spoil.
To wiggle about a bit. I will make every effort.
I feel like what's already been announced in terms of in the film, like what's on the cast list or things like that, is okay to mention. We don't have to say where they come from, I guess, or where things
plushies.
Spencer, first impressions.
Yeah, this movie is awesome. Like, everyone did a good job. They had Michelle Yeoh in it, which really just like chef's kiss on the movie right there, because I love her.
Mm-hmm.
Amy and I were talking about like the soundtrack to this movie. Like, it's got this presence about it where, like, you know, it's on in the background, and when it doesn't want to be noticed, you won't notice it, but when it does, it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And like really well done. But yeah, just really good job.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Ames? Okay, I'll go then. Because I see you over there.
I was trying to be like cohesive, and I can't.
I think this film has got to be one of the crown jewels for Marvel. Because this movie not only exceeded the expectations I had, but it also set a new standard for non-Asian studios to say it's possible to do a good job at representing the Asian or Pan-Asian Pacific Islander way of life in films. And you don't have to, you know, you don't have to. We are years beyond the Mickey Rooney age. And this film is at the very top, the very pinnacle of that mountain climb for understanding that you can make these movies here in the States and hit it out of the park. Because most of the time, if you look at some of the most beautiful works, they're very few and far between based out here in the U.S. You look overseas, there's tons of beautiful, you know, cinema from all walks of life. Specifically, we're talking about the Asian culture and these types of movies. This movie hit on so many different great things as a nerd, as a fan of inclusion and having all walks of life represented properly. This movie hit every one of those, that checked off every one of those boxes for me. And I can't wait to talk about it until after we get to Amy. So Amy, word vomit.
Blah. As I started,
she's speechless.
That was part of, actually, initially I did not have words to adequately describe the amazing gift that was given to Marvel and non-Marvel fans alike with this movie. The storytelling was beyond anything I had expected. The care and consideration to not only the subject matter, but the inclusion, the acting, the scenery. I was crying. And I don't cry at Marvel movies unless, you know, there's a snap involved. Because I really didn't. Yeah, well, that, to be very honest, the only times that I have actively cried in Marvel movies, and I can name them on one hand, which is the snap. So the entire sequence with the snap.
Iron Man 3.
Yeah, that's on one hand still. Thanks.
Bad movie.
No, you're such a mean to me. Iron Man 3, but that was because I was also dealing with my understanding of Tony Stark at the time. The Last Dance with Peg and Steve at the end when he came back, and this movie. And this movie, I had more than one space that I actively was like, oh gosh, okay, wait, what's going on? Why am I feeling like this? What is it evoking? And I think there was just so much care that becomes unexpected in so many places. And being a comic book fan for so long, you kind of get beat over the head with everything repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the season of Marvel stories and Marvel movies I'm not saying it's not intentional, but the intent is shifted. And they want to not just give you a knockdown, drag-out brawl. And so it blew my expectations out of the water. Spencer hit the nail on the head. That soundtrack, we were listening to the soundtrack, and we're like, oh my gosh, you can hear everybody in the way that it's designed, in the instruments. And then you hear it in the movie, when you hear it, and you're like, oh dang, oh yeah. This is I can't say a bop. I'm not one of those young folk.
Oh,
it's a jam. Okay. It was a jam.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then I'm gonna butcher Michelle's last name and I never do it right.
Michelle Yao?
Is it Yao?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. I always try to pronounce it wrong. Michelle Yao, she's a freaking goddess. I love her. Well, and Awkwafina was normal.
Well, let's talk about
Let's talk about Awkwafina.
So let's jump into acting. Okay. Let's talk about Awkwafina.
This is my favorite Awkwafina.
She's normal.
No, Awkwafina is great.
Well, I got another one. I got another one for you on that one.
You calm down over there. So the thing is, I don't think she's mellow. I just think she's being sincere. Like, I think she's being earnest herself.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like she's taking on a role for to like pander to the masses. I don't feel like she's, because we talked about this not too long ago on the episode when we were talking about the impact of black culture and how part of, like, even in understanding Get Out, how the mentality of how white America is working overtime to try to, you know, appropriate that culture and sometimes even try to make it themselves, make it their own, or other people. And we mentioned how Awkwafina, at the earliest part of her career, seemed that way. Now we get, I feel like we get mature Awkwafina who is having fun just being herself in all sincerity, because I feel like, number one, she's now part of the MCU. So, I mean, who wouldn't be excited about that? But secondly, I feel like this movie is her superhero movie, of just her being that representation to the people that look up to her, the young girls, Asian or non-Asian, who see her as something more than just the girl who used to wear the baggy clothes and act like she was like a rapper or super urban. This is the Awkwafina that will sincerely, I truly believe, one day win awards, you know?
Yay. Spencer, so this is not the first time I have seen normal Awkwafina. Mm-hmm. Did I just get an eye roll from the man at the end of the table? Apparently. Just to note, Spencer is not the man at the end of the table.
I'm not.
Yeah. So,
I have to, by mandate of the podcast, I have to be so far away that I can't kick Amy under the table. So,
noted. I didn't know that was in my contract. Got to get that updated a little bit more. So the Awkwafina, I knew after seeing her in Ocean's 8, where she was kind of stereotypical her, The Farewell, which I hope is still available on Amazon Prime, was the, like, 100%. And not even flatline. She is 100% normal. There is not even an infliction of her trying to be anybody but herself. It's fairly serious subject matter, but she does such an amazing job in it that I was like, oh, dang.
Well, and we also get another piece of evidence for that with Awkwafina as the dragon in Raya and the Last Dragon. She's
a little bit more, yeah, she's playful.
She's playful, but it's not like over the top ridiculous. It's actually fun. You know, we've reviewed that.
I keep forgetting it's her. It's hard for me to associate, like, people.
Well, and then when she shifts into a person, it looks like her too, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, it really did look like her. So this, yeah, she's so good. Like, it's not saying, oh, she's not palatable, whoever she is, but this is so, she's approachable.
She's earnest in this one. Like, it's more so seeing who Awkwafina really is outside of whom, like, studios or agents want to see her as.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's something that we can really kind of see as an admirable thing for her, and especially in her growth as an actress, as a influencer, as a human being, seeing that growth and seeing that honest, like, graduation to being somebody who no longer has to rely on anything else other than who she is meant to be to make it, you know, and I think that's great. I mean, another outstanding character in this film, I mean, we kind of mentioned it a little bit ago, but Tony Leung playing the lead of the Ten Rings, they don't really, I mean, they give him, like, different names, and he never like his monikers, but yes, Wen Wu, the name of the father, yes. He's an incredible, scary guy. I've never seen Tony Leung be anything more than the man who is trying to keep peace. And in this, he is the man who is trying to create war, or the master of war, if you will. And that's terrifying that he slips into that role so easily, seeing as it's his first time being a villain. But he is amazing in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I didn't look up the age, but however old this man is,
he doesn't age.
He has actual 10 rings.
Oh, like, yeah, no doubt.
He's got to, like,
he is genuinely immortal. Like, Keanu Reeves pushed aside, this man is the true immortal.
I mean, yeah.
Oh God, he's 59.
Is he?
He does not look it.
No, he looks not like he's all. In his 30s, maybe. What? Maybe mid 30s.
But speaking of somebody who doesn't look like they've aged, Michelle Yao,
she's so
this
gorgeous.
Woman is
flipping heck.
she's beautiful, and she is an incredible, like, she's doing a lot of those stunts in the film, and she is incredible. Like, Michelle Yeoh is just a international treasure. Like, plain and simple.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Watching her in this movie and seeing her speak to other people in the film and giving the wisdom that she has and things like
and
that.
It's narrating like, the entire open in. Do we ever figure out if it was Mandarin or Cantonese?
Oh, I don't even know.
She's the
open narrator.
Like, that was. We want to talk about not just acting, vocal, because vocal acting is acting. Mm-hmm. That entire open. Was beautiful storytelling. It was so great. Michelle, yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. She's gorgeous.
Sorry. She is. She's phenomenal. And in everything that she does, it always seems like it was just yesterday that you saw her in something 20 years ago, i.e., Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She looks the same. You know, so she's incredible in this movie. But let's talk about the star of the film, Simu Liu. Was it you who found out, or did we talk about it on the show, or was it before the show, in terms of what his job was prior to this film?
Oh, yeah, we were talking about because I just found out today that, like, he apparently was a stock photo model.
Like, that's right. There's a meme he's been putting around.
Yeah, he's been putting up his own photos.
That's how you get that money.
He is.
He's like, residuals? What? Meme.
I would have never known if he, like, I would have never known that he hadn't acted in, like, numerous films before this, because he's good in this movie. And his abilities are on par with it as well. I'm pretty sure he had to go through choreography to do a lot of the stuff that he did, and he does it so well that it seems
effortless.
Yeah, like natural. But his character role in this film is outstanding. And I know a lot of people were anxious after the events of the casting for Danny Rand in the Netflix show Iron Fist. Seeing the opportunity there and seeing it fall short, as people were coming to expect, hopefully, an Asian actor playing Danny Rand.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was some hesitation when people were speculating who Shang-Chi was going to be. In fact, Simu Liu actually posted on his Twitter years ago telling Marvel, "Hey, Marvel, let me play Shang-Chi in your next movie." Something to that effect. He actually put that out there into the ether, and lo and behold, you know, the ether spoke back and said, "Okay."
that reality stone, it gonna get you.
Yeah. And He's incredible. Every scene that he's in, he's earnest. He is genuine. I would truly believe that he's had years, if not decades, of training as an actor to do the role that he did here, because it's just so, like you said, effortless.
Yeah.
He
is, like, I cannot say enough about how impressed I am with Simu and the sincerity. Everybody came to the table with sincerity to play these characters.
Yeah.
And not only does it translate, but it brings the, when we talk about it, the balance and the harmony to the story, because this story can be heavy.
Yeah.
And it never feels that there are beats missed, the gravity of situations left to hang or to feel rushed. The story doesn't feel that it is bigger in scope than we are able to digest.
Yeah.
And it is because of the way that this is cast and the actors themselves that bring such it brings it to such a great and amazing level. The other one is the actress who played Xian Ling, his sister.
Oh yeah.
Which I think I talked to you about it, Eddie. You were saying that this was her first, like, major film.
Yes,
or it's her first film. Big film period.
This is her first. Well, no, this is her first film period. Yeah,
dang, girl. Look at her. She was a beast.
I know.
Right?
Looking at her filmography, there's literally only one film under actress, and it's Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
And she's like, "Okay, bye."
Like, everything else is just from, like, press and the press circuit from this year for the film, in terms of self. But under actress, it is literally the one entry. And that's another opportunity where you're like, I would have never guessed.
No, she crushed this.
Yeah.
Like, her role in this film, like, she was such a badass in this movie. Really? I was like, dang. Well, she knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. I you have to give credit to that, because it's like the people behind the film who do the casting recognizing that talent out of nowhere. I don't even know, like, I honestly don't know what she was doing prior to.
She's like,
there's literally no trivia or any information. There's nothing. Everything is all from this movie. There's literally five photos in her IMDb, and they're all surrounding Shang-Chi in the movie.
Good for her. She is, as Spencer said, she's a badass. I think there was something I was reading that she took MMA, jiu-jitsu, and something else to get in shape to do what she needed to do. She also, apparently, at one point, they were going to put a red streak in her hair.
Mm.
And then she realized...
Is that canon in any of the comic? No. I don't know if she actually has a role in the comic books.
So she technically... I just adjusted my glasses. I'm so sorry, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
I totally didn't. I'm so sorry. Technically, he has a half sister. Well, technically, because the problem
well,
is there's...
Well, technically, according to the comic book back in 1974, you see, Stanley was...
So why I say technically is because, again, we have multiple storylines, multiple universes. He has a half-sister, but it's not related through his father. It's through his mother. So there's different dynamics. So his sister is completely, like, purely new in this aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, like... She's... So red streak, her hair. They originally were going to put a red streak in her hair, much akin to, like, Knives in Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And she goes... She saw it and realized that it was the stereotypical Asian rebellion girl and said, no, I don't want that. Take it out.
Yeah.
And so I was like...
That's cool.
Like, and that's
That's being aware, too, as well. I mean, you don't want to be just that, you know, token Asian girl who's the rebel, you know, was once good and now has turned super rebel, Scott Pilgrim kind of esque.
I mean, even that for Knives, that's a different beast. And then seeing her in her element... at her club where she is the boss lady, and she's like, the boys wouldn't let me in, so I made my own. And I'm like, dang girl, get it. Also, her hype man Bobby, what's his name, from Crazy Rich Asians, he would driving me nuts.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, I was just like, no. No buzz boy
one
buzz
thing
boy.
To note, so one thing to note, side note to all of this, so I had sent Amy, I showed you the meme that they had made with the Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, and they used the image from Kung Fu Hustle.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually an actor in this movie who's from Kung Fu Hustle. It's Wai Yun. He is the... So in Kung Fu Hustle, he plays the husband to the landlord, the landlady. In this one, he is an archer.
Wait, is he the old man archer?
He's the old man archer.
Guangbo.
Yes. Guangbo, yes.
I remembered his name. Also, Awkwafina bonds with the old man. That's so cool.
Yeah, so I was thinking about it, and I was like, that old man looked very familiar. And then I had showed you that meme, and then have you seen Kung Fu Hustle, Spence?
Yes.
Okay, so you know who I'm talking about.
Well, I saw it like over 10 years ago.
He's the guy who's like super flexible, kind of like moving in and out. He's the husband who falls out of the top floor and then like just puts more dirt on him so he can hide in when the gang comes and shows up. It's incredible. But
that movie is so funny.
It's funny how that people have made that meme, and then there's actually a real connection to that movie. Not to mention, the poster for the movie is on his Shang-Chi's wall.
Yeah, in his Kung Fu Hustle.
In his garage bedroom.
Yeah, his garage bridge.
We've spent a lot of time on actors, but I do want to highlight one more person, and I think it's very important because he was great, is Jaden Zhang, the kid who played young Shang-Chi.
The teenager or the kid?
The kid. Yeah. The little boy.
A
lot of the more heavier and emotional scenes...
He got saddled with him.
Yeah, he did it effortlessly. Like, it was with perfection. He was great in this. Even in the scenes where, like, he's with his dad and he's seeing his dad do, like, horrendous things, he still maintains his composure, and it's pretty incredible.
Yes.
By the way, you have a pop filter over your mouth, so I can't see.
So what I'm saying, even when there's scenes with his mother,
or his father,
where they're real heavy, this young fella is on it.
So let's talk about story, because I know story is one of those things that Marvel usually excels at, in terms of creating these fleshing out these characters and so forth. I have to admit, one of the great things about this movie is that, number one, Marvel chose to go back to origin story creating. Because before, Marvel was like, oh, we're never doing another origin story movie again. We're just going to move forward and blah, 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 blah.
I was like, I don't think that's going to work at all.
No, it didn't. Because because essentially, you can't have a superhero just appear and not have, you know, a backstory. It worked all right with Spider-Man.
And it worked semi but all right with others. Well, also even Black Panther, like in a way, we got baby introduction, but we didn't get a full like starting from the beginning origin story with him either.
But the thing is that isn't technically their first appearance. So you already like Spencer said with Spider-Man, you've already had several iterations. There's only so many ways you can kill Uncle Ben.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You don't need mm-hmm. no.
You don't. I know. The bone saw is ready.
Oh my gosh.
What?
So
I like Macho Man. It's one of my favorite appearances.
We don't really need another intro into how Spider-Man gets created.
Right.
That's an obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
Black Panther, I think there's not much to the origin of it other than he is the rightful heir to the role of Black Panther, which, to be quite frank, I honestly feel like they do somewhat of a backstory in terms of creating that with the Black Panther movie. Like, understanding, obviously, he's coming back from the events of Civil War, and he is now king. That is kind of the full mantle of becoming the Black Panther, because he does take the flower, and he does the whole dream sequence and so forth, and the land of the kings and so forth. But you can't really have, to be frank, you can't really have a movie without giving a little bit of like of an expose on who they are.
Right.
And I think this movie does just enough to where it can kind of merit an origin story, but it just does really well, like in terms of giving all that information up.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think, Spencer?
Like, because we kind of just show up in the middle of like Shang-Chi's father just like attacking a place, and it kind of just goes from there. It doesn't like even talk about like how he finds these rings or like anything like that.
It mentions it in like quick passing, like, oh, it is said that, you know, Wen Wu found the rings in either a crater or a tomb,
or stole them from a tomb, but we don't know.
Yeah. And so like it's interesting how, like, you know, I feel like that's just going to be one of those things where it's like we loop back around to it when it becomes like super important because we need to stop Wanda or something.
To be frank, I think it will. I mean, it's according to the origins of the Mandarin, when you read about how, because like I said, I've read up more on the Mandarin than I did on Shang-Chi. The Mandarin actually finds the 10 rings that hold actual like celestial heroes.
Yeah. Yep.
Within the rings,
there are also rings on his finger.
Yeah, the ring rings on his finger.
Ring on his finger.
Oh,
so he can like pinky finger go and like zzz people.
So
yeah, it's straight up. I will show you a picture.
But
it's crazy.
He finds them in a crashed spacecraft
and steals them
in a hole, and he steals them essentially.
Yep.
So they are alien in nature, which I feel like brushing over it like that leaves the door open.
Mm-hmm.
For what we have coming up with the Eternals,
right,
and with the Marvels and everything else coming about, but I feel like, I don't know where we were going with that, why we were talking about it. Oh, what you were saying, because they were in terms of origin story. Sorry.
Yeah. So in terms of origin, like, I feel like
I got lost. Sorry.
I feel like at this point, I think Marvel kind of just wants to like juggle what is an origin story even at this point, because like I feel like they're basically baby stepping their way into be like, you know, we're doing this type of thing where like we're still introducing something but we're leaving something out so that like we can fill in later, and like I feel like this works and I kind of like it.
Yeah,
like,
no,
it's not like all like like past origin stories where it's like, you know, this is Captain America, he's started off scrawny and now he's big and now he's fighting Nazis and now he's frozen. Like, I kind of like how they're going into,
because I kind of feel like stories like that, like, if you don't do for people like Iron Man or Captain America or even the Hulk, you know, for people like that, you have to understand how Marvel is going to create that, like, that starting line for these guys. Mm-hmm. Because then from there, you understand, all right, we're going to do that iconic scene where he punches Hitler, or we're going to do that iconic scene where Iron Man, you know, finally comes into the full suit, or you look pensive over there.
I mean, they should have punched Hitler, but...
Well, they did in the USO tour. So...
Oh, right. Yes.
He punches Hitler. Yep. He does. Trust me. I'm thinking about it in the way that we talk about superhero origin stories, because, yes, when you have big name everybody knows, you almost kind of have to feed that... You have to feed that sect of people the... Show me the part where he punches Hitler. Show me the part where the first time he takes flight in the Mach 1. Like, show me those. But when it comes to lesser known characters, the liberty that's taken, depending upon who the writer is of those the screenplays of the adaptations, it's different. So a perfect example is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
You get a baby Peter Quill origin story in there. But it's just enough to kind of brush over where you don't need the information, so we get three. How about Captain Marvel, where all you saw was a pager for ages, and then I can raise my stinky Captain Marvel flag on this one because I'm a good fan, where that origin story was next to nothing, and she has an origin story. Or like Black Widow, we get the bits and pieces, and then we got that pile of things.
Got that film that came out.
But we come to lesser known creations, lesser known heroes, and the way that we define their origin story really depends on the director and who takes that helm.
I don't know. I think it depends more on what makes the hero. Is it the start, or is it the character as how they run? Like, the characteristic of how they run. Because you take a look at people like Thor. Thor, obviously, has been in mythology. He is somebody who is well-known in certain circles as just the character himself. Or not just the character, but the figure. But in the comics, you don't need to see how Thor came about, because it's kind of just who he is. His character, his attitude, his persona is what creates that foundation for people's understanding, i.e. like with Peter Quill. You don't need the origin story for people like Peter Quill, because you're not wanting to see where he comes from. You want to see what he's doing now, how he's responding
now.
Well,
you want to be introduced to him, but the question is when you fall in love with a character, you want to know more about them and you want to know where they come from.
Yeah.
So if they had started off with taking that section after, if they had just jumped straight to him walking in to get the orb, if they had done that and not brought in the initial part where he's there to see his mom's dying, he's got the tape and he runs out and then he gets abducted, you wouldn't correlate that suddenly we're watching some random guy walk into a big cavern stealing, you know, an orb, and we're supposed to actively care about this person. Like,
I don't think I don't know. It's a matter for me of personality for the character. Like, you look at somebody like Black Panther. Black Panther put on display not only his character, but his morals and his, you know, the that which makes him as a human being in Civil War.
But you had already established that in meeting T'Challa there, the act of needing an origin story from him was moot.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if we had flipped it. Like, wait, did Ant-Man come out before Civil War?
Did what?
What?
Ant-Man. Because Ant-Man was, that one was a bit of an origin story as well.
Yeah, Ant-Man came out before Civil War. Yeah. That was not the
2015? It had to, because he's in Civil War.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, wait a second, he had to.
No, well, and that's the thing that I was, like, part of me was going, okay, origin stories, where are we putting them? Are we trying to ham-fist them like we did with the twins for Wanda and Pietro?
You're talking about for the TV series?
No, for the
movies. Oh, you mean them. Okay,
yeah. Well. So we're looking at introduction of characters and superhero origin stories when they're trying to be ham-fisted into a team movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that's their introduction. And they try to throw an origin story in there, it doesn't work. But if we're looking at movies that are origin-driven, or, like, the emphasis is more origin-driven, it just hits different. And depending upon, I think, who's at the helm, mm-hmm. creates a better... We can't even call it a faux origin story. Like a midlife point?
I think it's just, however you want to put it, it's the character's starting point. Like, whether or not if it's at the origin of that character or where the character is at displaying in front of us as fans. You take a look at, and we've kind of hinted at it earlier, you take a look at someone like Natasha Romanoff. Mm-hmm. She's been in the MCU since Iron Man 2.
Right.
And her character, her personality... It's what's driven fans to maintain the likability with this particular character. For some, I'm not a big Black Widow fan, but I know there are people out there that are, you know. And I think that is what, unfortunately, too late, that's what drove to creating the Black Widow film that was long overdue. But I think it has to be, you're right, I think it's based on, number one, who's at the helm, and number two, who kind of carries the bigger characteristic? Like, who kind of carries the bigger personality? Chris Pratt is already a huge personality in himself. He's a huge character. He brought himself to the role. Mm-hmm. So you look at Chris Pratt, you think Star-Lord. Just like many people who look at Robert Downey, you think Tony Stark.
Chris Evans, you see
Captain America.
I could say Iron Man because I was thinking of the Hydra Stomper from the What If. My brain was like, Captain Carter, say what? Yes.
But you see these people who have created these personalities within themselves to being that big person on screen. I don't know. This is one of those instances where I think with Shang-Chi, his personality was there, but I think having the little bits that created the platform to which he stood on were pretty detrimental to this, or were pretty necessary to this story. Because without him, it's just this one man who's going to meet his father. But knowing all the little pieces that build him up, that origin part of him made the film. And I don't know. I don't know how Marvel's going to continue moving forward, characterizing what is and isn't an origin story. For all we know, they've chopped it all up and it's all mixed together. Yep. So we don't know how it's going to move forward. But I think bottom line for this particular film, for Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, and the Legend of the Ten Rings, I think this is, in my opinion, an origin story.
Yeah.
Like, can we all agree on that?
I can agree with that.
So.
And it's the best one to date, if I'm going to be...
Well, actually, that was my next question. How do you guys feel in terms of how this film came about creating the hero, as well as other ones? This is not our big topic question, but it's just a question I had in my mind.
For me,
like, and we're looking at like things like with the Hulk, because we have to. I mean,
talking Cap. You're talking frontline.
The major players.
You're talking frontline. So that's you're talking mainline Avengers.
for those who don't know, she adjusted her glasses.
I adjusted
again.
My glasses with that one. Then I'm gonna give Spencer time to ruminate. But for me, as far as origin stories go, he is not the A-list Avenger. Yeah. And when it comes to Shang-Chi.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah. Shang-Chi is not the A-list Avenger. He is not a well-known. So even by your question, he doesn't fall in line with those. Now, if we're doing an overarching superhero story, how does he match up against A-list Avengers for origin?
How does he stack up against any of them right now? Because we have, in terms of our, if we look at our roster, there's a good amount of folks that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them within, you know, even though they may be B players in the films, some of them have solid backstories. I mean, I have to say one of the most touching and yet impactful origin stories for me has to be Michael B. Jordan's character.
Yep.
In Killmonger. You know, that one has huge repercussions in terms of its impact in not only just Marvel fans, but in society as a whole. I mean, that movie spoke on tons of different elements circling around Michael B. Jordan's incredible ability to act in that role. Mm-hmm. And it was his origin story.
So, but that's also his origin story was a piece of that movie.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Shang-Chi as this movie as a whole was an origin story and a move through. Like, no doubt, Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger in Black Panther is absolutely, it's not just breathtaking, it is moving at its core. Mm-hmm. Sterling K. Brown too was just like, oh my gosh. Like, that movie gives weight, Black Panther gives weight to these stories wrapped in a bigger story. Mm-hmm. Shang-Chi, our focus is primarily on him.
Yeah.
And his movement to where he needs to go for the completion of his journey. And we don't miss any of those beats. But as an overarching, like, within storytelling for an origin or an understanding why the character works, Shang-Chi is focused primarily on Simu's character, Shang-Chi. We get little tips everywhere else. Black Panther, we tag on Killmonger. We tag on Sterling K. Brown's character, the other prince. We tag on, we even get a little bit from M'Baku. And we don't really see enough of Shuri, which will probably be in the next one. If we start looking at Guardians, we get Peter, we get a little bit of Gamora, we get Nebula in the second one, we get Drax. You get these little nuggets.
But
so, those are all. But so the problem is when you ask this question about origin story movies.
No, not movies. I'm not talking about movies. So we're talking basic element, just story. So the story is this non-ending thread. So throughout the series of all these, we're in phase four, mm-hmm. all through the last three phases and all through the phase four where we are now, in that thread, I'm asking to compare it towards other origin stories in that thread. Not movies as wholes. I just mean like things, elements of like Captain, okay, let's take the most obvious one, Iron Man, okay? Iron Man's thread is more literal in the sense of it is literally how he becomes Iron Man.
It's the same thing with Captain America.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's part of that thread. The movie may be, however, I wasn't a huge fan of the first Avenger, the movie, just because I didn't like the film style.
I did like that soundtrack, Alan Silvestri.
The soundtrack was good, but the way the film was shot, the way CG was used in some of those battle sequences that just didn't... It didn't rub me the right way. And so the movie is not high on the tier list of quality for me. But in terms of the story element, I can appreciate the story, the origin story. Now moving down towards like people like Clint Barton, who is Hawkeye, who has yet to have an origin story. However, we did get an opportunity to see the origin of one of his alter egos.
Mm-hmm.
Which is?
I almost said Nomad. It's Ronan, not Nomad. Yeah, Ronan. Sorry. I went Nomad, and I'm like, that's Captain America when he took off the star.
But we get that
you
intro, which
your glasses at me, Spencer. Hey.
Which in that element, like, it's not a very large story, but it's a very impactful story.
Mm-hmm.
In that small frame of what 30 minutes in Endgame, we get the entry, the starting line, if you will, of the trigger for Clint Barton as to how he becomes Ronin after losing his family in the snap. Spoiler alert, you should have seen it already. That's on you.
But, surprise, it's literally the first couple of minutes of another one.
But even in that, like, you have... what's the name of the actor? I keep forgetting his name.
Jeremy Renner?
Jeremy Renner, yes. Jeremy
Renner. I just remember he's not a super guy because he played it on the piano.
He's a great actor, and I love his story. In the thread of all of it, it's not, the movie is not based around Jeremy Renner, but I love that story, that origin story, if you will. So that's what I'm saying in terms of not, because like you were saying M'Baku, you were saying Shuri, even Killmonger, they're not the highlights or the focus points of the film, but they are plots in the story thread that runs through the entire MCU. So that's what I'm saying in terms of comparison to other story origins. How does this compare for you? With a pop.
With a pop. So this does well, but I think it's also supported by the cast a lot. Simu does great building to the present day who he is now.
Mm-hmm.
But we get a lot of that interplay for the story itself of his origin from other characters, from the flashbacks. We get all that. If we're talking about the impact of somebody giving that story, that origin story, the Killmonger was one of the first ones I thought of, and then Drax, if I'm being very honest. Drax gives you kind of what set him on his path. He has a very, it's maybe two or three scenes, that's it. And he talks about why he's, you know, why he's doing what he's doing and where it started. And so it comes down to performance. Like, this story is breathtaking. There is no question about it. Is it a traditional linear origin story akin to Iron Man, akin to Hulk, akin to the originals? No. And I think that's what makes it so great, that it's almost this unexpected origin story. Mm-hmm. And I like it.
What about you, Spence? How do you feel?
Well, I think this is like pretty good for an origin story movie. I also think that, yes, I agree with Amy, like, you know, the cast really does like an awesome job.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like, you know, part of this is Marvel learning what didn't work before.
Mm.
And not doing point. It again.
That's a really good point.
So, like
a really awesome point.
Like, this is like them showing like, you know, that when they make mistakes, they're like, okay, we will not put in a fake Mandarin again.
Oh.
like really figuring out what like what works and what doesn't, and then like, you know, like putting that into their future movies, so they're like, okay, let's try to make them better. Like, they learn, and that's great, and because like it really shows like they know what they're doing.
I think they also gave this space for us to actually care about the world that this character is in. Mm-hmm. Not the big MCU as a whole, not the, you know, we know everything's going on with the universe, but the same thing that they did with WandaVision, where we cared about the town and the people in it.
Yeah.
And
it's like the microcosm of the MCU that's currently occurring around the world.
Which makes it feel more personal, and it makes us connect more with those characters.
It also makes their worlds feel alive, you know? You know, like you watch something and it's like you only exist while we're in this room with the character, and the second he leaves, you stop existing,
type thing.
Like, this world feels like people are like going and actually doing things, you know? Mm-hmm. Like for example, with Wong, like he shows up in this movie and then he leaves because like you know he's doing other things, which I actually kind of really liked. Like, it just adds flavor text to the entire universe and to this movie of, mm-hmm. like, you know, I've got things to do.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but speaking of connecting, like, one of the other elements I did want to talk about was the effort of staying true to some of the Asian traditions or Asian culture within this film. One of the best scenes that occurs is pretty early in the film when Shang-Chi goes to visit Katie at her parents' house, and I forget what they call the grandmother.
I think, and it's not quite long as the, that's a different thing, but what they call her by an honorific.
Yeah.
Which grandma, they're sitting at the table, they're having breakfast, and the grandma is talking about her past, her husband who's passed, and he's getting everything he wants
for their Day of the Dead.
Yeah, for their Day of the Dead. And she's like stacking things, and she's got her little presents. And Shang-Chi immediately comes into the room, and he acknowledges everybody, but he leans over and he gives her a kiss, and he acknowledges her for her, and mm-hmm. continues to carry that conversation, which, like, it was just like, this is our family. This is what we do. You know how this works. Yeah. Like, and also, I love the taking off the shoes. Like, they made, literally, I was like, hey, all the shoes at the front. I'm like, yes. Yeah, there's so many, like, sorry, go ahead. Go talk quickly.
No. I One of the best scenes that I feel like kind of exemplifies the honoring of the Asian cultures and things like that. And I hope it's not spoilerific because I'm not going to give the details around it. But there's a scene where there is several different. I only know it in Spanish as to what it is, but they're like ofrendas. They have photos of past people who have passed
on.
It's your altar. Yeah, and in Mexican culture we have ofrendas, which have photos like that. But there are several of them there, and in the midst of what's going on, Tony Leung's character is in heated battle with Shang-Chi and others, and he steps away from the battle, and Shang-Chi goes to follow him. And when he finds him, he sees him honoring someone who he lost at the altar. And Shang-Chi doesn't interrupt in that moment. And he allows him the moment to honor, which goes back to Asian culture of honoring that which is most important, even in the midst of battle. Like recognizing that this is something that is almost duty-bound as the relationship they had for Tony Leung's character, and Shang-Chi gives him that moment to honor. And it's like, yeah, they get it. Like in that moment, that moment, as odd as it seemed for me one of the most moving scenes in the whole film, because at that point in time I fully got to see that Disney and Marvel were taking the steps and taking the moments to recognize that this is their culture and we stand back to honor that which is theirs. And I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was like wonderful. It's literally like a 2 second scene, 2-3 second scene, but I'm watching it and I'm like, oh my God, they get it. You know, it's such a beautiful thing. And there are other elements throughout the whole film, but this is one of those scenes where I was like, I have a much higher level of respect for Marvel Studios and to a lesser extent Disney for making this scene and for people who see it to know that what it stands for is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. But speaking of battle, one of the things I also wanted to talk about was the efforts this film made to actually creating real martial arts scenes.
Oh my gosh.
Some of these scenes are incredibly choreographed.
Spoilers. The slight spoilers if you're in here and you haven't seen it. I will try not to, but I make no promises.
There's many scenes that showcase different elements not only of martial arts but even honoring martial art films of the past. I had to school Amy in terms of helping her understand some of the elements that were being put on display with the film that I made you watch the other day.
First Strike. Jackie Chan First Strike. Because you're like, so at the end, this is not a spoiler, it's in memory of, it's Brad Allen? No.
So the film at the end highlights, yes, Brad Allen, the choreographer.
I just was asking about that and then you went into this thing. And it's, yes, Brad Allen was a fight choreographer for many films, including one of the ones you made me watch.
So Brad Allen worked closely with Jackie Chan throughout the history of his filmography. So when Jackie Chan started making bigger films, he brought Brad Allen to help him do a lot of the choreography because Brad Allen was a very nuanced martial artist. The film itself holds tight to several different elements of film in history. I was telling Amy, if you look back at the history of Kung Fu movies or even any kind of martial arts films, you look at two very distinguished studios. You have the Shaw Brothers and you have Golden Harvest. So Shaw Brothers was more classical. It was more very much from the side. When you saw the elements of the fight, you were seeing one side of it.
You mean like it was 2D scroller
type. It was like a 2D scroller, exactly. Like you're watching Mega Man. And so it was very much from the side.
That was the best way that I could, when he's like, it's from the side. It was like 2D scroller. Like, yeah.
But then when Golden Harvest started coming in and they acquired talents such as Bruce Lee, they started adding a third dimension to those fights. They started giving point of views. They started giving opposite side. They started doing the three-point spectrum on the point of view for filmmaking, where you have the point of view from the outside perspective, you have the point of view from character A, and the point of view of character B. And you, they allowed this to become not only a more nuanced way of filming fight sequences, but they allowed it to become the ultimate way of filming fight sequences. And they honored that in this film as well, because you see a little bit of the Shaw brothers in the beginning of the film, and then you see a lot of what Golden Harvest had done, and then you see in the fighting style, like with Simu Liu, a lot of his fighting style was based off of that which Jackie Chan had already created prior to. A lot of the jumping around, a lot of the reason why I made Amy watch that particular movie was because there's a really great scene in there where Jackie Chan is fighting a group of other fighters in like this abandoned warehouse.
It's with a ladder.
And he's fighting with a ladder, and he's fighting with chairs, and he's even fighting under a scaffolding. And he's using everything at his disposal, and you see that mirrored in this film and honoring that which has come before.
So you see it in, there's a scaffolding fight which they show in the trailer, and the bus sequence you see it as well. But yeah. Also not just the choreography, the fight choreography, but also the way and the presence that he carries himself when he fights with his style of martial arts. You start seeing parallels to different martial artists, to different, where I was like, oh, I know where that one's from. Like the way that the actors fight together speaks volumes to each of the different types of martial arts that they use to, like, I want to talk about the one I miss. I can't spoil it.
So there's a fight at the beginning of the film that has two very opposing forces, and it's essentially the two sides of the coin, if you will. It's got the might versus the beauty, and one of the things that you see is you almost see a sense of like Tai Chi on the feminine side, using that which is around them, their environment, incorporating you know subtle and fine movements to not so much incapacitate your foe, but to re-maneuver. Whereas with the other side of that, you have almost like a Wing Chun kind of fighting style, which is a little bit more intercepting. It's a little bit more forceful. It has a little bit more aggressiveness to an extent. But
it's earthbending versus airbending. Which you get, though. Yeah, that is... like that's literally how I saw it.
But you get these two, and these two opposing styles pretty much ruminate throughout the whole film in terms of the expectations to what you're going to see with the film, and the honor that it took and the respect for those styles to carry that throughout the movie, you know. But I just, you have to, and mind you, I would love to go into that more, but we just don't have a lot of the time.
No spoilers.
And yes, there are areas of spoilers. We're talking about certain things. We'll kind of divulge. But it is such a well choreographed film. Mm-hmm. The respect and the admiration and the honor that the filmmakers put into this film is very apparent, and it's very obvious. But I do want to ask you guys, were there any issues you guys had, Spencer?
Without spoilers.
But it's a spoiler. That sigh sounded like it might
No, no. Okay. I was just like double checking because I really don't think I have any issues with this. Not like a strong issue that I can like jumps out at me. Because this movie was like really just locked down and like laser focused on what it was trying to do. Yeah, I don't think I have any issue with me.
What about you, Amos?
I could nitpick, and if I'm gonna pick some nits, Razor Fist, I don't like you, homie. But that's me. So Razor Fist,
I don't know why he has a car at the compound.
Well, the best part is, how would you know what he is besides machete guy? Like, literally, he has arm.
We already have a machete in this world, okay?
Machete. Machete don't text.
Man, now I want some Trejos tacos. Like, can we go to LA? Let's go. So, if I'm picking hard, You've seen the guy with the blade arm in the bus. His name is Razor Fist. He's actually a comic book character. He just... like, he do you want to know what the best part was? He was the token white guy for the movie.
Very true.
He was the one token white guy.
He was the token white henchman.
True.
You know, in this movie.
That's and that true. Was... And I was just like, man, no... Which, by the way, we
missed a really big player in this movie that isn't really divulged. You don't really see him and you don't see him that much, but when he is on screen, his presence is very known, and that's Death Dealer, who is played by a very well-known martial artist in China, Andy Lee. He's a stunt coordinator, I believe, and he's also a martial artist, but he's the
guy in the mask with the ponytail.
He's the one who's training. Yeah,
he was a beast. I had no problems with him.
I think if I were to look at
I think if I was looking
at any issues of the film, I really can't think of any without holding any spoilers.
Exactly.
I wanted more Michelle Yeoh.
Yes.
There we go.
That's also mine.
Yes. That is right there.
So,
like, her contracts must state if she's in any movie, she must be in at least 50% of the movie.
Yes,
please.
If not, her voice. So,
which I mean, they gave you that first third where she was all vocals.
Yeah, but that was
and
like
then
10 minutes.
No, it was like 10-15. It was so, good, but I wanted more. It
don't
matter.
Moving forward, talking about the discussion question. So we just had an opportunity to talk about Shang-Chi, and then obviously we talked a little bit about Black Panther. It seems like Marvel is moving closer and closer to this inclusion opportunity for other elements. What I want to know is, obviously with the introduction of Shang-Chi into the MCU, is there anybody that you hope to see or are excited to see that is currently already in production next in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Oh, it has to be cinematic?
Well, I mean...
So I have a technicality.
So maybe somebody
issue.
Who may not already be like in production, but maybe somebody who should get a film or an appearance.
So they're in production, and the thing is that they will end up leading farther down the line when we get to bigger films. They will show up, but they are making small screen debuts in the time being. Oh, is that I'm allowed to talk about it? I don't know.
We're literally waiting for you.
I don't know.
Yeah, as she pushes up her glasses.
I'm not
actually
even
the first appearance came in comic book number 84 in the Weird Avengers. Blah blah blah. What is that?
They made an appearance
in one of the TV shows. That counts.
Okay, so we've got Miss Marvel.
Technically, it's all kind of part of the cinematic universe. It's all canon. Anything that's on Disney now is canon, aside from the cartoon, the What Ifs.
No, it's not
because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not fully canon. It was not retconned.
So,
and neither was
that's
Peggy.
Another conversation because actually,
yeah, shashu. So,
oh my god,
Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan, currently in production. I am so excited for her, for everything that Kamala Khan stands for. She is the first Muslim American. Superhero, and she's a teenager. I'm really excited to see how they do that. We've also got I don't know if it's Hawkeye's, but it's Kate Bishop as Hawkeye, mm-hmm. which means we're going to get Jeremy Renner and his protege, not his daughter, up in there with Kate Bishop. And then
are you giving multiple? Because I just
I have one more because, there's one more that I'm really flipping excited to see, and she's supposed to be showing up in No Way Home. America Chavez, Miss America.
Actually, she's going to be showing up in the next Black Panther movie.
Cool. So we get extra dippy daps. Yes. Wow. But
she's showing up everywhere.
I am flipping excited about America Chavez.
Are you done? You can push your glasses up back up.
My glasses.
So, Spencer, what about you? Anybody?
So continuing with America Chavez, I am also kind of excited for what appears to be them bringing together the Young Avengers.
Because
like, there's been a lot of like, sprinkle them over here, a little over here. Like, I think we're missing like one person, and they it seems like they're coming. So super excited about that.
Uh-huh.
Joke answer is also Howard the Duck, because
yay!
It seems like Marvel's like, will we do something? Maybe. Like,
and no, you cannot throw in your little.
I heard he did that.
We were on Capeless Crusaders.
You guessed it.
And someone
with
over
me.
Here decided that what was her name? The actress who played in
Marty's
Howard
mom.
The Duck.
She, Leah Thompson.
There
yes.
you go.
Little Miss Thing over here decided to report on that. Leah Thompson wants to direct for Marvel the next Howard the Duck movie.
I was distracting from a Dean Cain news
she was,
story.
She was just
I
distracting.
Did good.
She was distracting. But
that's what happens when you guest on my show, man.
Chaos. But
he's the best guy.
No. So talking about expectations for
who
what
would
I would
you
like
to see?
Yeah. I think since Amy went on a roll with multiples, I would probably have to say some of the biggest ones that I'm anxious to see actually have a on-screen opportunity. Blade. I want to see Mahershala Ali really kind of embody that character, and I think it's going to be phenomenal. But also, I'm excited to see Oscar Isaac's Moon Knight. Like, I think that's going to be so unique and insane, because he's insane.
Yes, he is. But that's a question of how insane they're going to let him be.
I'm really anxious to see how they're going to play this, seeing as mysticism and other kinds of magic, as well as the celestial, you know, area of heroes and whatnot is now being more and more included. I'm anxious to see how they're going to pitch him and what his first appearance is going to kind of look like. I'm really interested. So those are the big two for me. And who knows? You know, we know that a lot of those movies are coming like in 2023. So we have some time. So that just gives us more opportunities to speculate. But wrapping this conversation up, let's go ahead and go around the table. I want to start with Amy. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles for Shang-Chi?
All right, so this film passes for me. If you can tell by how excited I'm about it, you might need to re-listen to the episode. Between story, earnesty, soundtrack, this film is a wonderful ride through a community and a journey that hopefully you can find moments to reflect in as well. So I will give it a...
So it passes.
Yeah, I already said it passed for me.
I'm just making sure.
I started with that. Flippin' heck, man. I didn't even get to talk about the mythical creatures in this thing, and they're really cool.
Because it's spoilerific.
It's a 4.8 out of 5 monocles for
me.
Oh
my gosh. Spencer.
I'd give it a 5 out of 5, but you're going to yell at me.
You can give it a 5 out of 5. If it's a 5 out of 5, give it a 5 out of
5. 5 out of 5.
Okay, there we go.
There we go. Just
arm twisting into 5 out of 5.
Gosh.
This movie passes for me. It's really well done. Like I said, actors are just great in it. And it was really just a fun watch. And it was nice to be at the drive-in enjoying it. So I'm going to give it like a 5 out of 5.
No, obtrusive kind of people who are shining lights or anything, and
if they were, I was so engrossed in the movie I didn't notice. Which
there you go. All right. Well, for me, the film passes. The story element, the opportunity to see inclusion and proper representation, not to mention the absolute bombastic fight sequences and cinematography. This movie has every box that you can think of, or even not think of, checked off in terms of great. And so the film passes for me with every bit of earnesty that I have. This is a great story. This is a great movie. And in terms of monocles, this is one of those moments where when you look back on Marvel films and you look at everything that has come before, you have to look at, obviously, the great and the not so great. And looking at everything that we've experienced thus far within the, plus 10, over a decade of film, I have to say this is probably in my top 3, and I am, you know, gracefully and earnestly giving this a 5 out of 5 monocles. This movie is an absolute, you know, must watch. If you have the opportunity, go check it out, whether if it's, you know, in the drive-in or at the theaters. This is a movie that I would gladly go pay to see again.
I would pay for premium access if this had been on Disney Plus.
Oh, it was so interesting that it wasn't on premium access, actually.
Well, thankfully it wasn't, because it broke records with $90 million, so... But that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philosophers. Remember, you can check us out on any streaming platform over on iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Check us out, subscribe to us, let us know what you think, even drop us a 5-star review. I think we deserve it. We've talked about this, Spencer. We deserve it.
We do.
Okay. Also, you could check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We have over 280 episodes, not only just with Miss Intern Amy, but also with her podcast, as we mentioned earlier, The Capeless Crusaders. Great bunch of comic book guys and girls. Girl.
Singular. Unless if people are adjusting, hey, more power to you guys.
If you guys hear that, that's funny. check them out. Also... You, like I said, you can check us out on our website and on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. This movie is definitely going to be the one that people are going to be talking about for a long while, and not just for its fun and unique way of storytelling, but also because of what it does to further the opportunity and movement of bringing the Asian proper representation back to the big screen in a very correct and right way. So, I'm excited. I know we're all here excited as well. So, from all of us here at the Film Philosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm part-timer / all those extra things, mostly interning Amy. Maybe?
Class dismissed.